Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
A babelfish, said the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy quietly, is small, yellow, and leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy received not from its own carrier, but from those around it. It absorbs all unconscious mental frequencies from this brainwave energy to nourish itself with. It then excretes into the mind of its carrier a telepathic matrix formed by combining the conscious thought frequencies with nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain which has supplied them. The practical upshot of all this is that if you stick a babelfish in your ear, you can instantly understand anything that is said to you in any form of language. The speech patterns you actually hear decode the brainwave matrix which has been fed into your mind by your babelfish. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could have evolved purely by chance that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final and clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the babelfish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It could not have evolved by chance. It proves you exist, and so therefore by your own arguments you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man, and for an encore goes on to prove that black is white and gets himself killed on the next zebra crossing. Most leading theologians claim that this argument is a load of dingo's kidneys, but that didn't stop Ulan Khalufid making a small fortune when he used it as the central theme of his best-selling book, Well, That About Wraps It Up for God. Meanwhile, the poor babelfish, by effectively removing all barriers to communication between different races and cultures, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation.
Thundar, the Barbarian!
The year 1994. From out of space comes a runaway planet, hurtling between the Earth and the Moon, unleashing cosmic destruction. Man's civilization is cast in ruin. 2,000 years later, Earth is reborn. A strange new world rises from the old. A world of savagery, super science, and sorcery. But one man bursts his bonds to fight for justice. With his companions, Ookla the Mock and Princess Ariel, he pits his strength, his courage, and his fabulous sun sword against the forces of evil. He is Thundar, the Barbarian.
Hello, it is 34 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet heavily ostentatious studios of this, the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for drawing near on this Monday, that ye might be amused and informed, and that your life may be made better in ways exponentially greater than you could have possibly imagined or hoped. It is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. It's 503-505-6964. If you do call, here's the thing I'd like you to answer for me. Here's the thing about Thundar the Barbarian, is that there was a time when I watched Thundar the Barbarian, like, I mean, I won't say religiously, but I would say that regularly. I think probably every Saturday, which is when I'm imagining that show was on. I don't really remember, though. I think it was a Saturday. Are there still Saturday morning cartoon blocks? Probably not.
No.
That's a thing that's gone away because there's no need. Like, it doesn't need to be ghettoized onto a Saturday morning because it's now because they got their own, because they've got channels for that.
Yeah, but I have to admit, as a person who, you know, has a weekend, I miss that. I've been conditioned now to get up on Saturday mornings and to want to watch cartoons, and there are no cartoons for me.
I just realized that by saying there's a channel for that, I just sound like a really... I sound like an even an older version of the guy who says, you know, that you've probably got an app for that now. But anyway, I watched Thundar the Barbarian, which was on, I believe, CBS on Saturday mornings when I was growing up. And I have some Thundar the Barbarian. They're not even really action figures. They're like little... they're about the size and dimension. They're like little Lego people. They're like those minifigs from Lego, but they're Thundar and Ookla and Ocelot and whoever. I don't even know who Ookla was. Was Ookla the chick?
It sounds like a chick name.
I don't know. Sure. Did he have a horse, or was the horse Ookla? Didn't he have a horse with like big bat eyes and like weird wingy things?
I honestly,
you never watched Thundar the Barbarian?
If I ever watched it, I don't remember it. I don't know anything about Thundar the Barbarian.
It's one of those moments where I need Keelan to weigh in. I know that you know the answer to this, sir. So at some point you got to click. Here's the only point that I wanted to make here is that one man breaks his bonds. Sound of the bond breaking, and then the noise that is made here, presumably by Thundar himself.
It sounds very barbarian-esque, yes.
But I can't remember if that means that he therefore didn't speak, or if he just spoke and just said a lot of like, kind of like if he had dialogue of some kind. Mm. Hold on, let me see. I think I've actually got it right here. I've got the actual. I think I might actually have the Thundar the Barbarian sound. Hold on, let me just. If I get this to
2,000 years later, Earth is reborn. A strange new world rises from the old. A world of savagery, super science, and sorcery. But one man bursts his bonds to fight for justice with his companions, okay. Ookla the Mott and Princess Ariel.
No, Princess Ariel. So that's the chick. Ookla the...
The Mott?
Mott, which I think is like a horse. Hmm. I think it's one of those horses in Harry Potter that you can only see. It's like one of those weird winged, gray-eyed horses in Harry Potter that you can only see if you've seen someone die. Okay. So I can't remember, though, whether... The sound that's being made at the beginning, and I don't know why I'm fixating on this, if that is a sound being made by Thundar himself because he is, you know, a barbarian, or if that is one of his captors who is expressing displeasure at the fact that he has burst his bonds and declared himself to be a free man in manner of Johnny Goodboy Tyler.
You'd probably have to go look at it on YouTube and take a good look at it and revisit it.
How you doing with the talking today?
To be it's in that sentence.
Unsurprisingly, somebody is now calling us. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. How can I help you on this fine Monday?
Yeah, Rick, this is Mailman Rick.
Yes, hello, sir.
Ookla is the ape-like creature that is his Thundar's sidekick.
His sidekick, the Chewbacca to his Han?
Yes.
Okay, am I wrong in remembering that he had some sort of strange horse creature that he rode around on?
Yes, you are right about that.
Okay, but we don't know if that creature had a specified name.
I don't know. I just recently found out that Jack Kirby designed the whole show.
That's not true. Really? Jack Kirby designed... What do you mean designed Thundar the Barbarian? Please do explain.
Back in the 70s and 80s, Ruby Spears, and then before that, Hanna-Barbera, both animation studios, used to hire some of the old-school comic book guys to come up with the basic designs. You know that Alex Voss...
Oh, I'm sorry, I hit the disconnect button. Oh, now I'll never know. Till he calls back, I suppose. Oh. I was trying to embiggen his screen, so that I could, because at the same time that he was now he thinks that I'm just now that he thinks I don't care about his knowledge.
I know.
By the way, like 75 people at once just typed "best show ever" on the screen. That's it's all about giving the people what they want. People want Thundar.
You don't really get enough Thundar talk on mainstream radio.
No, that'll he'll be back here in a second. So I guess the okay, there we go. Because somebody was typing us. Sorry about that. That was my bad, brother. That was me. Sorry about that. All right. So they would hire some of those guys to come on and sort of to do design work or piece work or whatever for shows like this.
Well, basically, Alex Toth did Super Friends.
Okay.
And then Ruby Spears, who I believe did Thundar, and they were off. They had broke away from Hanna-Barbera, and I believe they hired Jack Kirby to do a lot of the designs for the Thundar series.
That would explain why everybody in that show looks so roided out, like, all the time. So, I mean, that was, there was an era when not everybody was rippling with muscles, but Thundar was really, that was a wall of man.
Well, it also looked like, to me, it looked like Kirby has translated through Toth, that kind of style, because Toth's style was what the Hanna-Barbera and the Ruby Spears styles were very based on.
Excellent. Yeah, Alex Toth designed Space Ghost.
Alex,
yes, he did.
Toth, oh, I'm thinking of, okay, when you say Toth, I am then thinking, I'm confusing that with two things. I'm thinking of A, the ice planet where Luke is attacked by the thing, which is Hoth. And I'm also thinking of the demon that Aleister Crowley kept trying to summon, which was Thoth.
No.
We're idiots, all of us. We're such retards.
Are you talking about the Ibis-headed god of Egypt, too?
I'm sure. All right. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification, my friend. It was. One of our many fine listeners who was present at Wonder Northwest.
Yes.
This weekend. So, all right. Thank you, sir. You have a fine day of religious fulfillment and happiness.
You too.
Okay. All right. Bye now. Okay.
There you go.
Back in the box. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. As though you could possibly confuse it with anything else on the goddamn planet. Let me just read this message. This is from Persons Unknown. Rick, I believe that Ookla the Mock is the one making the grog sound. That is G-R-R-R-A-A-R-R-G-H-R sound at the beginning of the show. Thundar and Ariel, who was hot, he says, by the way. That's how you know it. At that point, you realize the gender of the person typing this. Both rode regular horses. Ookla rode the Gumby-looking thing. Best show ever. All right, thank you.
Now, so, wouldn't that be more, it would look more like Pokey?
I think riding a thing that looked like Gumby would just be weird. I believe Pokey is who this person is thinking, yes. By the way, Keelan says, yes, it is Ookla the Mock making the noise. I am a nerd. Thundar is the best cartoon ever, and he uses the correct two R's at the end there, the correct spelling.
Well, if you're talking about Thundar, you have to use two R's.
Thundar! And then he says, wow, I think you just won back the nerd title. To whom had I lost it? Was there a competition lately and I wasn't invited to it? All right. And then somebody else just says, your audience is amazing. And simultaneously, someone else says, this audience is weird. I don't know if that's a new subscriber or not. Hello to by the way, to new listeners, Roger and Barb joining us today. I don't mean to, like a couple or anything, to best my knowledge, but Roger is a new subscriber, new listener as of today. He actually subscribed via Wonder Northwest this weekend, which happened at the Crown Plaza. So he came up and he just handed you, as my grandfather would say, cash money.
Well, he did. He said, I want to subscribe. And I was like, at the moment that he walked up, I was like, well, right now we're not really,
set up
for that sort of thing. But, you know, you can go online and do it, you know, via PayPal. So, I mean, he said, well, I just like to do as many transactions with cash as possible. And
okay,
I said, well, okay. And then Cheryl got there and I saw Roger said, oh, Cheryl's here and Cheryl knows how to, we can take your information and do this. And then he just pulled out a $100 bill.
Awesome.
And said, and I was like, we don't have any change.
Did you tell him it's only 80?
Well, I said, I thought he was only buying a month, too. So he's like, I don't have any change. And I said, we don't have any change. He said, that's okay. Just put it towards the cause. So I just gave him like a fistful of cookies and a bunch of stickers. I was just handing him stuff. Here, have some stuff.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you. Well, hello, Roger. And thank you for joining us and being part of the subscriber base of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Also to Barb, who is listening today as the result of a 3-month gift subscription that she's been given by a friend or a sister and an aunt or something. So I don't know. It all goes by so quickly. It's just a big blur of ones and zeros. Now I'm being quizzed. On which side of his belt did he keep his tiny leather pouch full of gold coins?
That'd be a 50-50 chance you're going to get that right.
But I'm visualizing... I'm visualizing my Thunder the Barbarian action figure at home. And here's the thing about my Thunder the Barbarian figure, which should come with Ariel and Ookla. It didn't come with the horse, the pokey looking thing. They actually have magnetic boots that they wear, and then they're mounted on a series. It's so dumb. Each of them actually comes with a sort of mounting base, but the mounting base is a giant silver coin of their own face. So it's like if you had a JFK action figure and you were mounting it on a JFK half dollar.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, but it's basically a base, and then I think the coin you can just use is,
it's currency. currency.
Oh, I'm sorry, by the way. Keelan has to clarify. He says, I'm not talking about Thundar. I'm talking about the man that bought his subscription in cash. On which side of his belt did he keep his tiny leather pouch full of gold coins? Oh, right.
Oh, there we go.
That's the right side, sir.
That's it.
There you go. I'm sorry. That was also 50-50, which you were talking about. Can we, by the way, because he's probably not listening, can we just talk about the guy with the Hello Kitty backpack? And
sure.
Not that there's anything wrong with a guy being a Hello Kitty backpack, but there was this guy wandering around. And he was a huge man, first of all.
This would be Wonder Northwest.
He was at Wonder Northwest this past weekend, not like at my home. It was Wonder Northwest this weekend. This huge guy, he was probably 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, he was a massive man of African-American extraction.
He was huge, but he was gigantic. And then he was wearing a Hello Kitty backpack, which was sort of like the big face of Hello Kitty. And then also carrying in his arms. And I said that, I mentioned that he was huge because he was carrying in his arms a huge Hello Kitty doll, which was
about 3 feet high. It was an enormous Hello Kitty.
Yeah, given the fact that it looked huge in him, and he was a big guy. And then he had a tail. And then he had a tail. And I can't tell what sort of creature the tail was supposed to be from. I don't know if it was like, it wasn't like a fox tail, because it was sort of gray, but it was long and kind of touched the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't tell if it was from a real creature or not. And the really disturbing thing was that the Hello Kitty was actually sort of, the Hello Kitty was sort of grubby and well worn,
I think is the phrase you're looking for.
Well loved, but without a lot of not a lot of downtime there. Like at no point, it seemed like he probably didn't take the backpack off, or maybe the Hello Kitty wasn't allowed to spend a lot of time away from him, out on her own, exploring the world.
Well, yeah, I don't think Hello Kitty is really so much a toy as it is
a companion. Yeah, somebody's asking if there are photos of Mr. Hello Kitty. Probably somewhere. I know at one point he had one of the pirate girls hold his Hello Kitty because he wanted to take a photo of her holding the Hello Kitty doll. So he went up and I never actually got to hear him speak, so I don't know what it sounded like, but I imagine it was sort of, can I get you to hold my Hello Kitty? And then apparently she did so, kind of shifting uncomfortably from leg to leg and kind of wondering if somebody was going to come along and sort of interrupt the conversation. So he had her posing with his grubby sort of besmeared Hello Kitty doll.
Yes.
And then he just took it back and then he put it under his arm, and then he didn't appear to be buying anything. He didn't appear to be going to any of the panels. He just, as they said in Mallrats, they're not there to shop. They're not there to work. They're just there.
So I think there are some people that go to conventions such as this because it is an opportunity for them to walk around, in whatever fashion they like and not be judged or harassed in any way. So I'll bet, he would probably go a lot more places and spend a lot more time in public with his Hello Kitty if he wasn't afraid of people being mean to him. So he probably goes to conventions because, he knows no one will judge him.
Well, and we thought, so that, to be fair, we were certainly not mean to him. I don't think we actually interacted with him. But it is one of
Up until the point, and I posted this on Facebook, when I said to Cheryl, I said, I really want to know what's in that backpack. And she goes, oh, no, you don't.
Oh, did you ask that too? Because that's why she was so pissed about it, because later I kept going, what do you suppose is in that backpack? And she was like, don't start. Because I was just thinking, I was wondering if it was just like rolls of duct tape or if it was, somebody named Hip Mage is calling in. What are the odds that he'll have something to say about this?
Oh, Hip Mage.
Hold on, let me just...
Maybe it's the guy with the Hello Kitty.
You sounded just a little bit like Kevin Pollak in that thing you do there. Hip Mage! Who's going to Hip Mage? All right, are you going to Hip Mage? All right, hello, Hip Mage. Sir or Madam is the...
Hello,
whoa,
Rick.
Jesus.
Hold
on, just wait. I got to turn your volume down.
Sorry.
All right, you have like a +5 deafening power. Okay, hold on a second. All right, let's try it again. Hello, sir.
Hello. So I was. I know exactly this gentleman with the Hello Kitty backpack you mentioned. I have seen him. I'm a regular convention goer here in Portland. I have seen him at no less than 3 or 4 conventions here. He goes to every single one of them, and he always has the same tail, and the same Hello Kitty backpack.
And do they always look a little used, or you know, possibly, you know, they're a little grubby?
Yes, yes, sir, they do.
I think it was.
Have you ever spoken to him?
I have never spoken to him, but I remember one time I was at a convention, and I was sitting in the main lobby, and I see someone walk in with one of those fursuits, and you know, it was a decent looking one, kind of cartoony. It had like a mining helmet or something, and I hear this man turn over and gleefully clasp his hands and say, "Oh yay, more furries!"
Well, was his voice, would you say his voice was deep and resonant, or was it high and sort of strained, or was it somewhere in the middle? What kind of voice did he have?
It was kind of in the middle, like it was a little higher than you would imagine coming from such a large guy.
Well, see, or not, as the case may be. See, because it's the large guy, yes, but then it's like you see him clutching the Hello Kitty doll with the Hello Kitty backpack, and immediately in my mind's ear, his voice appeared, and it was very much, it was a sort of high, kind of a lilting, sort of quavering kind of voice.
You're imagining him as the big, crazy Michael Jackson guy from The Simpsons.
I am. That's exactly what I'm imagining as. No, that is well spotted. That really is it. So, excellent. I think the comparison I made on Sunday is that it's like an E.T. where, you know, like Halloween is the one night when E.T. can go out and not be made the object of. Perhaps he feels that even if he is not doing anything in particular, this is a place where he can go and he can be himself and perhaps blend in with others that are also dressed in some unconventional fashion.
Yes.
Excellent.
Also, you may remember me, Rick, as the fellow wearing the Chuck Taylors and the Power Glove on Saturday.
Dude, you were the guy out front with the Power Glove, and you were talking about turning your Nintendo Power Glove into a taser.
Yes.
I tweeted about you. I just said, like, met best listener ever out front, Chuck Taylors and Taser Power Glove plans. Yes, excellent. And also, here's the other thing. You were smoking when I walked by. For a minute, I thought that you had actually hooked up either a cigarette holder or a cigarette lighter to your Nintendo Power Glove, like where the light gun part in the tip might have been.
I really wish that I were able to do that, but no, I had a standard one.
Okay, I'm just saying, like for the next convention, you know, you might want to have that ready. That's a thing, you know, because if there be a fair maiden outside who's getting ready to light up a Capri or something, you could say like, "M'lady," and then you just reach out your Power Glove and then like, you know, flame comes out of the end, and then you're the coolest guy ever.
Let's just hope that I don't have the taser and the
awesome. We'll go out on that joke. Good. Thank you, sir.
All righty. Best show ever.
Thank you. That is Hitmage calling in to clarify some things. Okay.
I had a whole weekend of getting to meet our listeners, and boy, they are
a breed apart.
They're a breed apart. Although, you know, I had a moment. One woman, she almost actually got me like welling up with tears because it was one of those things where she walked up and she was so nice and she had so many nice things to say about us and doing that whole thing of like thanking us and thanking me for like being on the radio and for talking. She said, "Dawn, she started with this whole thing. I want to thank you for being so open on the radio." And I was just kind of like,
but thank you for having no personal boundaries or filter of any kind and lacking the ability to discern what is public and what is private. It means a lot.
Your lack of shame is so entertaining to me.
Did I meet this woman?
I think you might have. I think she came back later because she wanted you to sign a book or something. But it was 2 days and there were so many people and there was so much stuff going on and it was just exhausting.
And many, many families and parents way cooler than our own.
I know. I got I actually got an email from the listener with the hit girl,
Jessica.
Yes, who won the contest.
Jessica and Sam.
Yeah, he emailed me this morning to say that, and he was dressed as Dr. Venture.
Yeah,
coolest family ever. I'm not sure exactly who she was. She had a big, tall, blue hair thing and a space age lady outfit. But yeah, a family. The dad was Dr. Venture and the mom was dressed up and their little daughter was dressed as Hit Girl and she was in the costume contest and she won for the best kids contest. But they're listeners and they came by and we were both, Rick and I were just, you and I were both bemoaning the fact that our families were so uncool and unfun that they would have never done anything like that.
And that was Jessica, Sam, and Lucy who were respectively Space Girl, Dr. Venture, Hit Girl. And then later on, we saw that other, I think it was like a mom and maybe a younger sister, or maybe older sister, younger sister. But there was two women there, and then they had a child with them, and he looked to be like maybe four or five, and he was dressed up is like the littlest Jedi. Somebody, I think it was Patrick, was saying that he was a Jawa, but I don't think he was. I think he was dressed up in like the Obi-Wan. Yeah. He had the brown, yeah, like the monk robe.
At the costume contest, actually, at the end of Sunday, there were a lot of, everybody was there with just awesome contests. It was great, the costumes. But there were these three kids, and they had them come up on stage just to show them off. They were, all three of them were about five. They were very, very small children, like 4 or 5. But one kid was in Spider-Man, and the Spider-Man suit with the built-in muscles, which on like a four-year-old is hilarious.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And then there was another kid about the same size, about the same height, who was Venom. And they were walking around together.
Were they pals?
I guess they were. I think they were there together because they were walking around together. And then there was this third kid who wasn't with them, but they brought him up too, who was the most hilarious thing ever. He was a Hellboy. But you got to figure, he's only about like 3 feet tall. He was like four. And he's got the overcoat, and he had it was like a Hulk hand, but it had been painted red. So he had the big giant fist hand, a gun in the other hand. His hair was pulled back in a ponytail. He had just basically two black dots on his forehead to show where his horns had been burned off, and his face had been kind of reddened up a little bit. And I saw him in the aisle, and he walked by me, and I said, "Your costume is awesome." And he just looked at me and just made this kind of snarly face.
Yes,
and I realized, oh God, he's in character.
Yes, of course. No, you. Hellboy doesn't. Charlie doesn't surf. Hellboy doesn't smile. And I like the idea that there were miniaturized versions of all of the, like a mini Venom and mini Hellboy, Hell Lad. The other thing is that there was the Obi-Wan kid, as well as all the others, and then at one point there was that guy who came by, and he was like, because the pirates were all there, PDXR was there. But then there were all these, I mean, this sounds redundant, but then there were all these rogue pirates where they were like flying under their own flag.
Scary vampire pirates, this guy and his girlfriend.
I don't think the
around.
Regular pirates liked them.
No.
I don't think the regular pirates liked the vampire pirates. I think there was there was some sort of a schism there.
They did end up winning for best pirate costume, though.
It was pretty, well, because none of the PDXR guys even compete in that.
No. Dan Clark was one of the judges.
Yeah. Would,
but none of the PDXR pirates were actually in the pirate
costume. Because that would be unfair. They would discourage other entrants, I think. So it was really a great time. So thank you to everybody who, thank you to everybody who came out to Wonder Northwest this weekend. And we want to thank Billy Galaxy for putting it on and for inviting us to be part of it. And there was lots of stuff that, in fact, just this morning actually on in Beaverton for Outlook Portland, it's going to air this coming Sunday, but which I guess would be the 22nd. But this morning at Outlook Portland, we did an interview with Matt Hunter and Kyle Yount, who were from A Jumps, B Shoots, and Kaiju Cast, respectively, which are video game and Godzilla based podcasts, which are just. And so I had I was hosting the panel for that yesterday, and then there was the Multnomah County epidemiologist who was talking about the way in which the zombie epidemic, the zombie apocalypse, would actually spread. She might be coming on at some point in the future. And then the panel that I didn't get a chance to go to, and I'm regretting this. The one panel that I missed, I forget why I missed it. I was doing something or other. I think it's when I was talking to the boilerplate. Paul Guinan and Anna that do the boilerplate, and there's the boilerplate like Heartbreakers, like crossover book and whatever. But so because of that, I missed that panel that was all about everything you wanted to know about the Star Wars holiday special, which was one of the things that I really was wanting to see. So hopefully that somebody either filmed that or it's going to be available. Somebody's asking if the podcasting panel was recorded. It was recorded. I think Kyle Yount himself of Kaiju Cast, which you can find at kaijucast.com, which is KAIJUCAST. He, in fact, recorded it, although I believe that one of the microphones may have been malfunctioning. So we're going to try to find out about that.
I would also like to thank just the support folks. Like Cheryl was there all weekend with me. Jenny Hieronymus, our listener Jenny, came out on Sunday and was helping out at the booth. Russell Cofford, my soon-to-be in-law, and Lil Adam at Minuteman Press in Vancouver did a great job with making us a big sign and printing up our stuff for us.
We had signage, as they say.
Yes, so it was a lot of fun. It was quite delightful.
I ate one of your cookies when everybody was looking. Oh. Just FYI.
That's okay. There were a lot of cookies.
Coming up today, we have a Clergy Watch, Taser Watch. Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian will join us here in a few. We'll do a recap of last night's episode of The Killing, and in mere moments, we will have Aaron Duran from Geek in the City with today's Week in Geek. Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Iran is delaying the trial of two American hikers accused of espionage. A Ferris wheel death was likely caused by a broken cable. And a bar is getting in trouble for offering goldfish racing.
Is that a bar here?
No, it's a bar in Albuquerque.
Okay. All right. Goldfish racing, you say?
Yes.
All right. This man, I think we lost the connection with Aaron, so I'm actually ringing him back as we speak.
Hello.
Hello, Aaron Duran. How are you? I'm sorry, you're on hold there, and then I went to do a thing, and I think it... Where's my geek button? There we go. Awesome. Excellent. Fantastic. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from geekinthecity.com with the Week in Geek, our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran. How's your... how's the mucus?
It's cleared up. I can actually breathe and talk this time.
Yeah, Jen, so I know you were not able to make it to the Zombie Economics signing on Thursday, and then we were sort of wondering whether you were going to be at Wonder Northwest this weekend because you were going to be a part of the podcasting panel. And we should also thank Kabel Hashitani, who stepped in on the podcasting panel as Dr. Manticore and knew exactly when to go into and out of character, which was awesome, which really, like, sold the whole thing. But
it was fantastic. I heard he was great. I was really bummed I couldn't, because I had to work on Saturday. And then, I was still not moving on Sunday. It was not pleasant.
There was a great moment where he was sort of there because there was, Court and Bobby, and then were Kyle and Matt Hunter was there. And then Cable is there, you know, for the Alter Ego Society. So he's in his sort of like Stormtrooper meets Kraken kind of outfit. And I said,
Dr. Manticore.
I said, sir, Dr. Manticore, what do you have to say about this? And he immediately went there. And just kind of spoke in character, which is awesome. And then did it again at the very end, which is the joke you see coming a mile away, but is still fantastic. So, excellent. Well, I'm glad you're feeling less, phlegmatic.
Yeah, I'm no longer patient zero, which is nice.
Awesome. Did I read this correctly? Is there Wonder Woman news happening today?
Well, yeah, the Wonder Woman news is that NBC decided that perhaps buying this awful David E. Kelley Wonder Woman movie show was a bad call. So they are no longer going to be making a Wonder Woman TV show.
Wait, so it's been scotched altogether?
Yeah. Yes. Apparently they saw enough of the dailies. I don't know how much of the pilot they shot, but apparently they saw enough, and they saw the scripts and said, hey, you know what? This sucks.
This is a terrible idea.
Let's not put any more money into it, yeah.
Which is a thing they almost never think of in time when it comes to superhero properties. Nobody ever stops and says, this isn't very good. We should end it now.
And, of course, that's not what they're saying, though. They're saying, it was terrific, and Adrian Pilecki was terrific, but, it just doesn't really have room on our schedule.
Yeah.
Really? Well, that's actually what they say?
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, I'm outside. You might hear the occasional bus right now. What's really frustrating is that now also the executives are saying that one of the reasons why we pulled Wonder Woman is that we just don't think that the audience will accept and appreciate and follow a strong female superhero lead.
Oh, it's our fault.
BS.
Yes, I see. Yeah. We're not mature enough to accept it.
Yeah, because you know, geeks hate strong women characters. That's why we loathe Ripley and River Song and Sarah Connor. We hate them.
Well, and God knows
they're the worst characters ever.
And of course, they would know this because, of course, Wonder Woman's a brand new character that doesn't have a track record of success as a franchise any way.
It's some dame. It's not like she's been around for 75 years. The problem is that it's not that we don't want a Wonder Woman TV show. I think a lot of people would love a Wonder Woman TV show. We don't want David E. Kelly's Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yes. he seemed like entirely, I don't know who the right guy is, but it seemed like he was one of the wrong guys to do that. It seems like you could go back to the grab bag and get almost anybody who's better suited.
It seems like Hollywood, in their great vision, only go to two different dudes and they want to write about women. They go to Joss Whedon, and he couldn't pull it off. I'm like, well, what about that Ally McBeal guy? He writes good chicks. Get him, it's just all retarded.
Well, and at this point, it almost seems like it would just be anticlimactic for Whedon to do it. I mean, because he did such a great job of just not being a writer, not working on a franchise, not having a franchise to work with, of just creating his own and doing his own female archetype from scratch, which he's actually done a couple of times now. It just seems like that's a at this point I'm not saying it would be a step back, but it does. it seems like that would... There's just no need for him to do that unless he himself really feels like a burning desire to do
well,
it or something.
Well, and he did actually try it, and he admitted he couldn't make it work.
Well, that's and that's really interesting. Like, if Joss Whedon is saying he can't do it, that it does it. You know, that is a tough row to hoe. Then, so
she really is a tricky character to write, which is why when she's writing correctly, the books really stand out. I mean, there's two Oregon authors that I can think of that have worked on the comics that, as soon as they announced a Wonder Woman TV series, you know, the internet, as it were, just exploded, saying, "All right, that means you're going to get Gail Simone and Greg Rucka, who are two Oregon writers that both wrote really fantastic runs of Wonder Woman DC Comics." I said, "Okay, that means you're getting those two, right? Right?" And you know, that never happens because, you know, why go to the source material when you're trying to bring something to the screen?
Oh no, and the guy from Boston Legal is available, so you know, just go right to that.
Yeah, go for him.
Let's see what else we have. There's another Resident Evil. Am I reading this correctly? Is another Resident Evil game or another film? Or, well, I guess one indicates probably the other will be forthcoming.
A little bit of both, but they are doing another. Mila Jovovich is doing, I believe this will be the fifth Resident Evil movie.
Yes, because the last one was.
And, and shockingly, this actually is following the reverse. Because Corman has that whole thing, and like you make the first one, and then it's eventually, as the movies make less and less, you stop and you break even. The Resident Evil films are actually making more money the more they make.
That is a rare thing. Very, very rarely will sequels outgross the original. That's what happened with Friday the 13th, which is why they kept doing it for so long. And I remember reading something that the second Resident Evil had outgrossed the first, but I didn't know that it would continue with the third one.
Yeah, the third one took a hit. The third one, and not U.S. numbers, it's always internationally.
Right.
In Europe, Resident Evil is considered one of the biggest blockbusters ever. I mean, it is huge over there. Primarily because a lot of the cast is made up of really popular European actors. Maybe not like the leads, like Mila Jovovich or anything like that, but a lot of the secondary characters in Resident Evil are big in, like, you know, BBC dramas or European shows or, like, Italian or Spanish, you know, melodramas. So they get to see their local actors on the big screen, and they're just huge, huge events.
Hey, this speaking of Resident Evil and stuff like this, though, international properties, has there ever been or have they talked about making a Silent Hill movie? Is that a thing?
Roger Avery did one 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was kind of awful.
Where was I? That I didn't even I wasn't that must have just come and gone completely on my radar somehow. Roger Avery, the Pulp Fiction. Roger Avery, did he?
Yeah,
direct
I think it was the last thing he did before he went to jail. Because isn't he in jail right now?
That's right. He got busted. Yeah. What was it? I don't even remember. It's all coming back to me now because that's another thing that has fallen on my radar. The fact that he did get sent to jail, or he was risking being sent to jail for something or other.
No, he went to jail for something or other. Or did he actually go to jail? Or was he pretending to be in jail?
I don't know. I know that they were. It seemed like there was a story where he was facing the threat of. Okay, so the Silent Hill film was bad though. It's not like a thing I need to go watch.
No.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean it has some good kind of visual moments, but I mean, this is the biggest problem with so many video game translations in the film, is especially a game like Resident Evil or Silent Hill, that the games themselves are so cinematic that why waste the money and try and translate them onto the screen? You're already getting a good cinematic experience when you play the game. I mean, a lot of those games, if you're watching someone who's good at it, you can have as much fun watching it because as long as they don't die, you're watching the story unfold on the screen already.
And honestly, the Silent Hill movie was like watching someone else play Silent Hill. It was like she walks into the building and then she goes, "What's this? It's a painting on the wall. Maybe I'll take the painting off the wall. There was a door here. It's the same
really
numbers on this key."
Movie.
Yeah.
So it was my experience sitting there watching the Doom movie and going, wait a minute, this really, surprisingly, this isn't very good.
Yeah. Well, the only good part about the Doom movie was that last 5 minutes where it was all done in first person.
Yeah, but that was just like a sop. That was almost painful to watch because you could tell that was their sort of like one tiny little nod to the whole premise. I mean, to the greatness of the franchise. And I'm not saying you can do the whole movie as like POV or something, but I mean that was almost like that was just a bad reminder. That's like when a terrible band plays their one great song and you go, "Oh, that's right. I wish the rest of it was more like this."
Yeah, exactly.
You actually wrote to me this morning. This is the way your text goes: Wonder Woman, Resident Evil, and then you write, "Crap, forgot the last thing."
Yeah, and you know what? I still can't remember the last thing.
Okay. Awesome. Well,
because I think all of Portland is burned out from Wonder What Northwest, and there's no real peaky events happening this week.
No, there's been a lot of stuff going on, you know, this weekend. I mean, I think people are sort of people are a little frayed around the edges today.
Yeah. yeah, pretty much everyone's taking the collective and time to sleep kind of moment.
So that is, well, if the third thing does occur to you, you can actually, you can be reading that. Folks can be reading that at geekinthecity.com. It is geekinthecity.com.
And then .com. And then every Friday you can download the show at geekinthecity.com.
So there's Geek in the City Radio available at geekinthecity.com, home of one Mr. Aaron Duran. All right, we'll continue on the road to recovery. We will talk to you soon, sir.
Thanks, man.
All right, that is Aaron Duran. All right, awesome. There you go. Okay, so that's like, I mean, it's really like somebody's phone making noise over
there? No, I was trying to make the stripper clock move so I wasn't like constantly looking at her butt.
And did you inadvertently trigger the stripper
clock?
No,
the only way I could make the stripper go around the pole was to push the little button to rotate her a couple of inches so that her butt was facing away.
We're not talking about a real stripper, by the way.
I realize I could have just turned the entire clock around, so I was just looking at the back of it.
I wondered why you were doing that. Speaking of, you were mentioning the listeners of people who came by our table at the Wonder Northwest this weekend and introduced themselves and said howdy and said hey and whatever. Somebody unknown says, hello, Rick Emerson Show. You guys are great. Dawn had drinks with Adam and Russell last week, and I am super jealous. You guys are great. Great, they say again. So apparently we are great also. Yeah, they're also jealous because you had drinks with someone.
Yeah.
I don't think I know Adam and Russell.
Well, Adam and Russell are the guys at the print shop.
Ah,
and when
okay.
I went to go on Friday night after I battled traffic to go to Vancouver to go pick up the printing stuff, which it turns out, I always forget how big Vancouver is. So I go, oh, I'm going to Vancouver, you know, thinking, go across the bridge. There I am. I'm in Vancouver.
Oh, no.
And I got the GPS on. And it's like, it's on 4th Plain. Well, 4th Plain is, you know, and it was like, by the time I find the place, I'd just seen a sign that said 1 mile to Battleground. It took me forever to get out there. So
it was at the absolute edge of Vancouver?
Yes, it was
then?
All the way at the other
like
end of
Like it was the
Vancouver.
Furthest you can go before you are actually in, before you're heading to like Battleground or La Center or something.
So
someplace.
By the time I get there, it's like 6 o'clock and the shop is already closed, but they're waiting for me. And I get there and it's Russell who is slated to marry Patrick's cousin Leah. In July.
So we get the family discount for this?
So, yes. Awesome. So we got a family discount for everything. But, and then Adam, who is a listener of the show and is always talking about the show and talking about the show. And Adam was there because he wanted to meet me.
Aww.
So I know. It was very sweet. So I got there. And then another person whose name I hate myself, but I can't remember. It was a woman and her name was Cheryl, Cynthia,
sure.
Julie. I don't know. So I feel really bad because I can't remember her name. But yeah, I talked to him for a bit. We talked about some stuff. He showed me around. I got to see like the big pieces of printing equipment and stuff. And then we were back in the back where his desk was. And he was like, would you like some scotch? And I said, sure. You know, I got a long drive home. Let's get drunk for it.
Why not?
So, so we sat around and drank Glenfiddich for a while before I left. So.
The thing about being in Vancouver is, as you said, sometimes people will say they're in Vancouver. And it's like, and because Vancouver is a thing that I just think about way more often than I ever go there, I'm like, you're right. Just imagine it being, you know, it's like you cross the bridge and it says, you're in Vancouver. And I go, hooray. Because if I'm going there, normally I'm just, like, I would just be going to, like when we did the idiots living in the truck, you know, it's like that's just you know, you go over the bridge and then it's like, and it's like a mile or two, but then every now and again, like I knew this, I worked with this guy Jeff White at Intercom. He was the promotions director there, and I played poker at his house a couple of times, and I think I only ever went out there for the card game like twice, because it was one of those things where you're just driving for so long that you are convinced that you are no longer like in Washington at all, that you have just completely, you have gone in the wrong direction and you are in some separate area of the state altogether.
That was actually the first thing I said when I got there. So I said, okay, am I actually even still in Washington?
And that's when you realize that people make that commute every day. That there are people that every single Monday through Friday, they are driving from Vancouver to Portland or vice versa and back again. So that is, every time I think about moving to the outskirts where I can just get away from people, that's the drive that I think about.
I will say this, though, because Russell, one of the first times I met Russell, we were talking about printing things because he is manager of a print shop. And he said something about business cards. I said, I've just been getting them from VistaPrint because, you know, they're practically free from VistaPrint. And he's going, those are crap. And I just kept thinking, well, and I kind of went, oh, yeah, okay, sure. But I'm thinking, they're business cards. How nice do they have to be? I mean, you get them, you pass them out to people, whatever. And then I got these business cards from him this weekend. He gave me business cards and I pulled them out and they're glossy and thick and heavy. And I realized, Oh, yeah, those Vistaprint cards are crap.
This is what happens when you actually... Nice. Yes, when you go to a place where people actually pay for things. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll take a break. We'll come back after this. We got your Clergy Watch coming up today. Taser Watch, Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian, and a recap of last night's episode of The Killing. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. But their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. He left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the Force, they say. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday. Well, I know he built C-3PO, and I've heard how fast his pod can go. And we were broke, it's true, so we made a wager or two. Ooh, he was a prepubescent flying ace, and the minute Jabba started off that race, well, I knew who would win first place. It was our boy. We started singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. We caught a ride back to Naboo, 'cause Queen Amidala wanted to. I frankly would have liked to stay. We all fought in that epic war, and it wasn't long at all before little Hotshot flew his plane and saved the day. And in the end, some Gungans died, some ships blew up and some pilots fried. A lot of folks were croaking, the battle droids were broken, and the Jedi I admire most met up with Darth Maul and now he's toast. Well, I'm still here and he's a ghost. I guess I'll train
this boy. And I was singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. We were singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. You know, if you got more, like, Thunder the Barbarian observations or whatever. You can also email if you like. It's Rick. We didn't even get a chance to do the phone numbers and the whole contact information at the top of the show, because right at the... I mean, it was like 30 seconds into the show, and immediately we were... Immediately we were talking about the Hello Kitty backpack guy, yeah, and then what the hell an Ookla is, and the whole deal.
Can I show you my thing that I brought in real quick before we move on to other things?
Yes. By the way, you either did not notice or chose not to comment on the fact that during Legion of, or between Legion of News and this show, when I was busy editing, and because there was a, I should say this, by the way, if anybody was listening to Legion of News and heard there was a little glitch at the top, the first 15 minutes or so ended up being a rerun, but the entire file is going to be posted at Cascadia.fm, LegionofNews.com. But between the two shows, I was editing that. You didn't even notice that when I did a full dawn, I like picked up I wasn't even looking at the mug. I was looking at the screen, and I thought, well, this editing is really taking a lot out of me. I could use some crisp refreshing. And then I picked up the mug, which I thought had like a quarter of an inch of liquid in the bottom of it, and it turned out to be half full. And I did the thing of lifting the mug to my mouth and then kind of doing like a sort of a, like a tossing motion, like I was going to shotgun it, and then just like threw half a mug of Vizo in my face.
No, I was too busy typing the show notes into my phone to send to you because
you don't have a computer today.
You may have noticed I don't have a computer today because last night the laptop just finally... It just like an elderly relative that has just finally breathed its last. It finally just went, and I'm not going to turn on anymore.
And we're done.
And so I'm, in fact, just now I just sent out a message on Facebook where I was saying, so anybody in Portland, if you have a line on a decent used laptop for $200 or less, because I really don't want to deal with Craigslist people if I don't have to.
The thing about, and so now you're using your phone for everything, and the, you know, even an iPhone, which is, you know, again, a glorious and magical device. Surfing the internet or doing any amount of, do people still surf the internet? Anyone? Ryan White from the Oregonian?
Sure.
Do we call it? You mean like we don't call it that?
Hold on, let me see.
I kind of more paddle out into it and then get you know, knocked off my board and washed ashore, gasping for air.
I just think of it as more as poking around on the internet.
I just didn't know if that was a thing we still said or if we had moved on from that. Like when here's the thing people don't talk about anymore. People don't talk about having home pages.
Yeah,
a home page is a thing that doesn't really exist as such in the nomenclature. So, but about being online and, you know, doing internet stuff, it was even worse when I had a BlackBerry, and I love my BlackBerry, but that was a device that was, we could do an entire show about the rise and I think probably the imminent fall of the BlackBerry. But the BlackBerry was all about messaging. That was all about texting and email and whatever, and the web stuff was just sort of, that was an afterthought. That was a thing they added on later when they realized people sort of wanted it. But I remember trying to do stuff on the internet, and it was just, it was like trying to look at Disneyland through a keyhole. I mean, it was just so, you know, you could kind of get a sense of what you were looking for, but it wasn't really all that practical. So you're having to do everything sort of on your phone now.
Yeah, I came in this morning. Fortunately, Greg and Sarah weren't in here this morning, so I was able to just come straight in here first thing this morning, and then get all the news and do all of that on the one of the Macs
yes.
that we have in here. And then, but then I like actually downloaded The Killing and was going to watch The Killing. And then I realized I couldn't watch The Killing on that Mac because that's the Mac that's streaming the show.
Yeah.
So I couldn't. No. So the audio playing at the same time would be like a really bad idea.
Yes.
So then I had to download it on iTunes and watch it on my phone. So it was. It's kind of been a sad, miniaturized little morning for me.
And that is one of those things where that is a looking glass thing where, from your perspective, you're describing it as like a huge hassle and a huge pain. Whereas, like, to the you of, like, 12 years ago, it would be you'd be, like, describing the most glorious and golden future, you know, that could ever... And then I was, you know, able to just conjure a television program onto my phone and watch it right here in my seat. Where Really, and by the way, we should note, with your phone attached to nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, without wires or cables or connectors of any kind, you're able to do magic out of the ether, out of the void, out of the darkness. Like Moses conjuring the part in the sea, you were able to just conjure last night's episode of The Killing and watch it on your phone.
And this is why you don't really hear about David Copperfield anymore.
No, really. I mean, I'm going to make a thing that's big, slightly smaller than before.
Well, what's really strange is I've realized recently that I have the giant 55-inch free TV that I got at home, and then I have my phone. So I'm either watching things really huge or really, really tiny.
There's no middle ground.
There's no middle ground in my world.
Hey, here's the thing about David Copperfield. So if I were to say David Copperfield's defining or the signature trick that you most closely associate with him, what would it be? The thing he was known for.
Didn't he make some building disappear? Like the
Empire Statue of Liberty or something.
Well, he makes a lot of stuff
disappear. That was it, the Statue of Liberty.
That's the one right there, the Statue of Liberty. I think about the Statue of Liberty and I think about the thing where he walked through the Great Wall of China. And so doesn't it seem like with the internet... maybe this isn't. I'm just not looking in the right place. I am not one of those guys that thinks like it's so much more interesting if you don't know how the magician does it. I totally want to know how the magician does it. I have no, there's no. Here's the thing, because I'm not really under the impression that it's actual sorcery. Like there's no real wizardry going on there. It's a guy going like, look over here, and then he like, you know, and then he pulls it like a scarf out of his pants or something. So I would be, my whole thing. I really, really want to know how he did the. How he did the whole Statue of Liberty disappearing thing, only because so much was made of it at the time. Because that was right when they were, I think they'd just done that whole revamp where they spent years like scaffolding the whole thing up and then redoing it all. I remember when I was a kid being immediately less impressed than I should have been because he did it at night. And it seems like making something vanish when it's pitch black outside is not all that hard. That really is just a...
You shut the lights off.
That's like a thing if he could...
Where'd it go?
If he could just get you to squint your eyes a little bit, it's like most of the trick is already kind of done for him. But... It does surprise me that more of that stuff isn't sort of revealed on the internet.
There have been some TV specials that have showed how really huge tricks are done, and I am always fascinated by those. There was one I saw where someone had made like a tank disappear or something, and they dropped a big sheet around it and then made the tank disappear. And of course, it was just one of those things that were like, you know, while the people were walking around, they were just driving it out the other side or something. I can't remember exactly how it happened. It was very, very clever, though, because it seems like, because when you're just trying to figure out, okay, how did you make something so massively huge just vanish like that, you think that's just not possible. But
I think the reason the thing about about magicians like that is I think it just because of my completist nature and because of my sort of because of my raging OCD, it just violates my sense of, because it's like having everything on a checklist done but one item, and the last item is like, know how he did that. And so then it just sits there, and I keep going back to it like your tongue keeps going back to a missing tooth. Who, just trying to, you know, get it taken care of.
Who is it Chris Angel or is it some other guy, the one that keeps like burying himself and stuff or
no,
sitting on a flagpole?
That's David Blaine.
David Blaine, because I love how every time David Blaine does something, it just pisses off Penn Jillette. And he will always give some interview. Someone will go to Penn Jillette to ask him about something, and he will just say, "Go, he's not actually in the box for a week, okay?
Yeah.
Come on!"
Yeah, the whole David Blaine irritates me. I would like to see him just, I'm not suggesting anybody would do this, you know, or should do it in my direction, because that would be wrong and illegal. I would just like to see him beaten savagely.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, will you pay money to see his magic? No, but I would pay to see him just locked, just put inside a burlap bag, with just a bunch of weasels on speed. That's the thing that I'd pay to. I don't know why he shouldn't anger me. He shouldn't irritate me. He's never done anything to me. I've never met him. I've never interviewed him. I don't
it's
know anything
he's
about
so
him.
Smug.
I think it's because he just. I don't know. It's there's something about where he does that. He does that thing of bringing that weird, like almost that weird sort of over dramatic vibe to it that I associate with bad high school like drama readings and poetry.
Yeah. Also, he seems like he has no sense of humor about himself at all.
No, and also he was porking Fiona Apple, so that's like a thing. So then now she's ruined for me. That's can never
the whole terribly pointless endurance test. It's like that guy that died last year trying to set the world record for the longest time sitting in a sauna.
I don't remember that.
It was the world competitive sauna thing, and the guy who was winning.
You're sitting in a hot
died,
box.
And you some things shouldn't be competitive.
That's awesome.
You shouldn't really need to see how long you can sit on a block of ice.
It's like when I was a kid
on a fire or just stop it, people.
At some point, these competitive eating things are just someone is going to explode. Someone's stomach is going to burst and they will die of septicemia.
Oh my God. Okay, so somebody now here's the thing. Speaking of Pendulette can't do it himself because he's too well known. Pendulette should rig a guy with an appliance. Like a practical effect, and just, I don't think I can shove one more in. And there's entrails everywhere bursting out of his shirt. That would be awesome. Okay, and you probably couldn't do it like the Nathan's Famous thing, because they would probably, you know, they probably check you to make sure that you don't have like a false throat or something, you're putting the food down. But you, at like one of your regional, one of your Chinook Winds eating contests.
Or we could just do it here at Portland. The Rick Emerson Show could host some kind of competitive eating thing down at Waterfront Park, and we could just have a ringer, have a guy rigged to explode.
And then the other guys could all be, and then we could do the standby, the guys could all be rigged just to projectile vomit. That would be awesome.
Do you have to rig them to do that?
Probably not. It would be like
looking for some way to get some media attention.
It would be like Penn and Teller meets Gwar, meets Joey Chestnut.
Yeah,
I love the idea of I couldn't possibly eat one more, and then intestines everywhere. Okay, excellent. Yeah. There's our big spring promotion.
All right,
wonderful. We did once and once only. We did an eating contest at one of our. This is before Entercom killed that guy in California by having him drink water for like a day and a half in the studio. In the hold your wee for a wee contest, which just seems so. Clearly ill-advised from the get-go. I mean, from jump.
It's these counter-arguments against evolution that allow so many issues to.
The best thing about the Entercom contest, it was that people. It was like they were actually during the contest that people were actually calling into the studio and talking to this idiot morning show and saying things like, "I'm a nurse. This guy is going to die," and they were like, "That's hilarious," you know, and then playing like a quacking duck sound effect and hanging up the phone. And then, you know, sure enough, dead listener. And so that they immediately like put the kibosh in any and all consumption-based contests here, which not, by the way, until after the Playhouse had done something which was legitimately, I thought, sort of great. They were giving away Britney Spears tickets. And this would have been like on the Oops, I Did It Again tour, because it was, I think, the last big tour she did that came here. And it was like the number of cigarettes you could simultaneously be smoking. That was the contest, which is perfect for that demographic. And so the winner was a woman who had, I mean, it was like one of those black and white, like, you know, circusy photographs you'd see from the 30s with a guy with a cue ball in his mouth or something. It was a woman who had like, she had like 75 Winstons or something in her mouth. And they're like, okay, but you got to actually be inhaling. And she's like, and so they lit like the front of all the, she's got just like a huge cannon of cigarettes in her mouth. And she's kind of going, and then just, I mean, it was, I'm surprised she didn't die like then instantly of nicotine poisoning. But we did a thing at one of our fifth listener party. I think the theme was white trash barbecue, and so we had, I think, I don't know if it was inspired by something or if we were just idiots and we couldn't think of anything else, but we had an eating contest, and it was room temperature SpaghettiOs, and the deal is they were right out of the can because it was the worst thing we could come up with. It was also cheap, and Mailman Chris was one of these, and I think he may in fact have won. But at one point, a guy, he didn't vomit as such, but he was eating a little too quickly, and they did a bit of a log jam in his throat, and so he kind of did sort of a choke, which if we get in retrospect is just sort of like we were just coming with like within a hair's breadth of just the biggest lawsuit probably. But so he kind of went, well, I can't swallow these, I better just shoot them back out. So he did kind of a bleh, like kind of a coughed them back into the plate, and then he apparently had partial dentures, like some of his teeth were not real, and so then some of his teeth just came out. And that was when some of the other contestants looked over and they see what appears to be a guy just spitting up his own teeth. And that was it. At that moment, Sarah and I were on bullhorn, so we would just begin, you know, chanting like hurl, hurl, because we saw it like, and we were just so. That was the entire point for us, was just we were hoping to trigger like a massive just chain reaction of spew, because we're 12 basically, and because you know that I find as much as I don't go for flatulent humor, like we don't find fart humor funny, vomit humor is hilarious. There's nothing funnier to me than vomiting. And the thing is, we all felt that way. There was like this one iteration of the show where there was like this nexus of aficionadying. There was a three, like Sarah and Tim and I were all aficionados of vomit humor. And we weren't able to make it, although apparently it was unpleasant to clean out the bathroom in that venue. That was at Billy Reed's on MLK. Apparently apparently whoever was on sink duty was not they were not big fans of ours. I have no point to the story.
Okay.
Hello, Ryan White. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What is new in the world of music, sir?
What is new in the world of music? Hayes Carl's here Wednesday night.
And while I'm thinking about it,
Doug Fur.
I got to say, Raphael Sadiq.
Yes.
So thank you for the recommend on that, because that's been playing. So I was listening to it, and then my wife latched onto it, and so that has been kind of going nonstop in our house for the last week or so.
Awesome. I've been listening to it fairly frequently as well.
Is there more Making of the Love with the Raphael Sadiq on all the time?
I'm sorry?
Is there more Making of the Love with the Raphael Sadiq on all the time?
Well, it would be ungentlemanly of me to answer, sir. The thing about that record that is so amazing is how much it sounds like it sounds like it has this thin coating of 1960s dust on it, and I don't know if it was recorded actually to tape, or if it was really recorded in mono, or if that is now, if there's some sort of Photoshop type filter for Pro Tools that just like makes it sound like it was recorded, you know, in 1961, but it's really something.
Well, he's got like a 22,000 square foot studio complex down in Southern California where they record it, and I'm sure there's a fair amount of analog. There's probably in 22,000 square feet everything that you could possibly want in your studio complex.
That's what that Tony money will get you.
That and some co-writing on some other people's hits, some John Legend stuff and stuff like that. So,
so you said coming here this week is?
He's Carl.
Where at?
The Doug Fur.
And so this is, and to you, last time Hayes Carl was here, you were talking about, I think you went, did you?
Yeah,
did you not?
Yeah. She ended up having dinner with him and his band beforehand.
Yeah, and you were really
pretty entertaining.
Talking about it, and you gave it a big thumbs up, and it's just one of those things that then fell off my radar again. So I, now that things have slowed down a little bit in terms of my extracurricular activities, I might be able to actually get out and actually do some things. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those, I don't like my country to have a stylist. Kenny Chesney is coming this summer, and I don't trust, I pretty much don't trust anybody in a fitted sleeveless t-shirt.
Country singers with cap
but,
teeth.
But especially, a country singer with a hat, a fitted sleeveless t-shirt and puka shells.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to trust. But, Hayes is kind of, he's got the tattered voice that doesn't always arrive live, certainly on time, but a really sharp writer, a very sharp observer of humanity. I mean, his new record's called K-Mag Yo-Yo and Other American Stories. And K-Mag Yo-Yo being a military acronym for Kiss My Ass, Guys, You're On Your Own. And it's largely a road record. It's sketches. It's the kind of things that you would see on the road, the kind of characters that you would run into. There's a really great song that he sings with Corb Lund and Todd Snyder called Bottle in Hand, which is really just kind of a rambling Depression era hobo type sing along. And we were listening to it at home, and my wife was like, "Hey, they're the new Highwaymen."
That's speaking of the Highwaymen, I actually came in the other day, and Sarah and Greg were listening to the Highwaymen to that record, I think, because they had never actually. I think Sarah had never heard it. The two of them had never heard it. But that was, it got me thinking. There aren't a lot of equivalents to that. It's funny you mentioned the Highwaymen, because that's a thing that. There was this sort of window of time when things like that seemed to occur, because that was there was the Highwaymen, which followed on the Outlaws, and there was the Dolly Parton and she's on the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack, singing the Go to Sleep Little Baby song.
Alison Krauss?
No, it's not Alison Krauss.
She's not doing that one.
With the really long hair.
This is like the third time in a week that you and I have forgotten the name of somebody that we know. All right, we're losing this. Clearly, I'm just being dosed with something when I'm not here. But there were a lot of those sort of super groups, yeah. in country, and that's just not a thing that happens anymore.
It just pukes out Lady Antebellum on the
Emmalou Harris. Thank you, sir.
Emmalou Harris. You know, when I went to New Orleans for Jazz Fest a couple of years ago, I think the oddest thing that's ever happened to me at a festival, I'm standing in, I'm in a port-a-john and I can hear Emmylou Harris from one of the stages. And, Emmylou Harris she might actually be an angel. And to hear that while you're in a humid port-a-john is just not, is a kind of disconnect.
It's an interesting confluence. Oh, God almighty. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk more with Mr. Ryan White here in just a few, but we should get some actual news done here, if I can find my actual
first, I get to show you my
sounder.
Thing.
Oh, yeah, you were gonna show us.
Ron,
I have no idea what this
thing.
Is. You referenced a tree of some kind that you purchased this morning. I don't really know what it is.
Okay. Saw this at 7-Eleven and thought, worst marketing idea for an automotive product ever.
And this is an air freshener?
Yes, it is the Little Trees air freshener that hangs in your car, and the scent is black ice.
Impending doom. What is it?
It smells like death.
Why would that exist, do you think?
I have no idea. The Women's 7-Eleven said it's very popular.
This is, do they indicate what it actually smells like? This follows on our discussion from last week. We were talking about everything is just, named like blast and arctic and treetop.
As far as I can tell, it just smells like some kind of perfume or something like that. But it's just like, why would you name something an automotive product?
After a vehicular hazard.
Yeah, after something that will kill you.
I don't know. Perhaps it's for those who are living life on the edge, but not so much that they want their Monte Carlo to reek.
Dave Grohl had a photo on Twitter the other day of him in his car with his Motorhead air freshener hanging off the rearview mirror.
That's wonderful.
I don't know if I want my car smelling like Motorhead. As much as I love Motorhead.
Well, I guess it all depends on what vibe you're trying to The guys I always wonder about are the guys who have like the Playboy air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. Which almost, it's like some of those things also, they almost just serve as like, they're almost just talismans, I think, to keep women away. It's if you want to keep ladies from being inside your, and it's always a guy in an El Camino. Always, always, always an El Camino. Black ice.
Black ice.
All right.
Black ice car air freshener.
Let's see, we should do this, which is this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, Miramax has become the latest movie studio to make its movies available for streaming on Netflix, on their online subscription service. Beginning in June, Netflix subscribers will be able to watch several hundred Miramax movies, the company said today, with dozens of titles being added on a rotating basis. Miramax's movies include Good Will Hunting, Kill Bill, Clerks, and Netflix subscribers pay $8 a month to stream movies through their internet connection, or a little bit more to get your DVDs through the mail. They have been spending heavily on deals to add more movies and TV shows to their streaming sites.
Wait, so is this Miramax doing it themselves or doing it through Netflix?
Miramax is doing it through Netflix.
Okay, and this is the actual streaming, just not because the DVDs were already available.
Right.
This is the
right
because the as I think many people have noted, now that it was like the idea of having the DVD mailed to you was revolutionary in its time, of like 4 years ago or whatever. But now, with the instant that they made that stuff available for streaming, then it's like the wait to get the DVD, which is like the next day, depending on where you are, just became excruciating.
Yeah.
It just became a thing, or even like just walking down to the freaking Safeway and just getting out of that like dispenso box that's right there. Like, no longer can I be bothered to take the 12 minutes out of my life that it's going to take to get the movie, where it's like it's got to be delivered to me instantly, or else it's not just that I don't watch it. It actually then angers me. Like, it become like they've done it to slight me somehow. Like, it's a personal affront.
Have you seen they're still running those commercials all the time about those movie rental kiosks where they're saying it's the fastest growing segment of the, you can work from home, you can do, nobody believes that.
No.
Those things in the McDonald's are the fastest growing segment.
Is that a thing they pitch you as like a franchise opportunity?
Yeah, on TV, it's all the time.
Really?
I guess
maybe
that explains why there's so many of them.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were franchised.
And so what, but how would that even, is the deal, do you buy the thing and then you...
They show you how to service it or whatever.
That seems...
I've never actually bothered to go to the webpage and
look,
because I don't see that as a business opportunity that fits my current lifestyle.
No, probably not. I wonder if that's just where the company sees that they just see the imminent implosion of their business model around the corner, and they figure this is the last chance to unload all of those things really cheaply on somebody.
I don't know. Netflix is massive, and they have and they keep expanding, and they keep adding more and more and more kiosks. I mean, people do use
them. Wait, are there actual Netflix kiosks?
Not Netflix, Redbox, excuse me.
See, but that's the thing I don't get. I don't understand how that's possible. I don't understand how that business model can possibly have any sort of lifespan to it when you figure that everybody, whether they can afford it or not, gets a phone.
Yeah.
And all of those phones now come with the Netflix app.
Yeah, but I think probably the majority of people still use DVDs for movie watching.
I would be curious to know what percentage of people who use Netflix, or not even people who use Netflix, what percentage of people who have phones that are capable of getting Netflix do so, and people who have Xbox, for example, use their Xbox to get Netflix. In other words, if there are Netflix customers who are just unaware that you can do it any other way. Huh.
Right. I don't know, but pretty much every time I've only used Redbox a couple of times, but every time I drive by the one, you know, like by the McDonald's or the Walgreens by my house, there almost always seems to be somebody putting something in or taking something out of it.
That's a fair
point.
They're
busy
because it's Safeway. I guess it's the same way. There's one at the Safeway by my house, and there always does seem to be a mom and some grubby faced children standing in front of it. And so I don't know if that is an impulse buy or if it's one of those nag buys where it's like the kids start agitating for you to get them, something, and then you do.
Maybe. I think you might also, if you're a parent, be more likely to let your kid, put a disc in and out of a DVD player than let them, download torrents and upload things. Handle your iPhone or actually log on to Netflix and pull stuff up.
Okay. That is probably a possibility as well, that you don't want your child monkeying with your electronic equipment. Here is Don Taylor.
Okay. A Washington State Patrol trooper shot and killed a runaway 500-pound pig after the officer's stun gun failed to slow the animal. The spokesman review says Trooper Morgan Mahaffey first saw the pig running down a sidewalk in Spokane Valley in eastern Washington Friday after it escaped from a minivan through a broken window. The trooper herded the animal out of traffic with his patrol car, pushing it back onto the sidewalk. Mahaffey then tried to slow the animal with a stun gun so some volunteers could rope it. The paper reports that when that didn't work, the pig's owner told the trooper to shoot the animal.
Hold on. So there's a pig. How big is the pig?
500 pounds.
So there's a 500-pound pig, a quarter-ton pig, loose in Spokane Valley, but that's because it got out of a minivan.
Yes.
So the question then, I think maybe we're... it's all well and good that that the paper's focusing on the fact that there's livestock loose in Spokane, but that it was in a minivan, not like in a truck, not like in the back of one of those, a farm
conversion
vehicle. Yeah. Like it wasn't on its way to a plant of some kind or to be rendered into something. It was just along for the ride with its family.
Yeah. Well, he said the owner had just purchased the pig for breeding, so apparently he was transporting it home in the minivan.
And it didn't quite fit in the car seat to the way that,
I saw a miniature pony or something in the back of a station wagon on the freeway once. I thought, wow, I was pulling up, the car was in front of me on the freeway,
awesome.
And as I was approaching, I thought, that is a big dog. Figuring it was like Great Dane or something standing up in the back of a station wagon. And I got up there and I thought, no, that's some kind of a pony or a burro or something. And I thought to myself, that's something you wouldn't see in Los Angeles.
Did the pony just look at you with sad, baleful eyes? sort of call the police.
Oh, for the love of God.
I don't know why I'm here either.
But he has a 500-pound pig.
Okay. A minivan.
Broke out of a minivan.
In Spokane Valley, which is where I used to live, by the way, when I lived in that fair city. And let me just tell you, the 500-pound pig running around Spokane Valley is not apt to be spotted and identified as being an external entry into the population anytime soon.
Let's do our clergy watch.
Here is your clergy watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you. Cause I gotta have faith.
There is Don Taylor with your clergy watch.
A jury has been chosen in New Hampshire for a man facing charges he raped a 15-year-old fellow church member who was later forced to stand before the congregation and apologize for getting pregnant. 52-year-old Ernest Willis was charged with forcibly raping Christina Anderson twice during the summer of 1997 when she was his children's babysitter and he was 39. Anderson has agreed to have her name published. The Associated Press generally doesn't identify people who say they were victims of sex crimes, but Anderson, who is now 29, asked that her name actually be made public. Former Trinity Baptist pastor Charles Phelps is on the prosecution's list of witnesses. Anderson told police that Phelps arranged for her to move to Colorado and forced her to write a letter of apology she had to read to the congregation.
No good can come from the name Phelps, apparently. That is a name that is just, that is a name that is cursed somehow.
Yes, then she was forced to, she was told to move into a room in Pastor Phelps's home until she was to leave for Colorado, which happened within days. Phelps is adamant that he reported his allegations to Concord police and was critical of them for failing to act. Police said they didn't try to investigate in 1997, but couldn't find her. They didn't locate her until last year when friends and internet posts revealed she's living in Arizona under her married name.
What was the, I mean, I know it was an apology, but I mean, is there any sort of specificity about the nature of the apology? I mean, I guess I'm just wondering how that would have been, how that would have been phrased. Or I guess, but it wasn't like she was apologizing. Was she apologizing for getting pregnant and positioning it to the congregation as though it was because she voluntarily had the sex?
I'm really unsure. Phelps said that he had helped to relocate her at her mother's request. Anderson said she's nervous about testifying. Who is this guy, Cool? There's Prosecutor Wayne Cool. He said he doesn't object to a motion that they question Anderson about sexual abuse inflicted on her by her former stepfather as well. But she also he does object. He doesn't want her to testify about. She said that the man who raped her offered to take her out of state for an abortion and also offered to punch her hard in the stomach to induce a miscarriage.
He's a real prince.
Yeah,
that's. It's a real strong pond you're fishing from there in that city. So
also,
this is
also a heck of a church as well.
This is one of those things that, like, okay, does it say what denomination they are?
Baptist.
Because this is the Baptist, Mormons, and Jehovah's Witnesses are really big on the public confession of, you know, whatever your slight or perceived slight seems to be. I know any number of people. I know any number of people who that was like the deciding factor in leaving one of those more strident faiths because they were they seem to view the public confession of your slights and your sins and transgressions to be that was their preferred method for absolution of said sins. So,
but it's not punishing you. It's actually you're helping
well,
yourself.
Well, it's the warm embrace of
something.
All right, there you go. There's your clergy watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, to somebody who just texted, yes, that was the sound of Ryan White's bristles being a hand being brushed over his face in front of our. That is the clarity and fidelity of these microphones.
Wow.
That is the quality of broadcast that we have here. That one can hear facial hair being adjusted live.
I really got to shave.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Don Taylor.
Greensboro, North Carolina police said two workers were taking down the Ferris wheel at the Greensboro Youth Council's carnival when they fell early Monday morning. The accident happened just before 2 a.m. this morning in the parking lot of the Greensboro Coliseum. The carnival opened Tuesday and closed at 8 p.m. yesterday. Investigators said workers were in the process of disassembling the rides when two of the workers on the Ferris wheel fell. Investigators said the men were in bucket-style lifts when the cable broke, causing a pendulum motion, and eventually the men fell. They were in individual buckets that were in different locations. The worker in the higher bucket died. He was identified as 42-year-old Michael Douglas Cook from Columbus, Georgia. The other workers in the hospital with critical injuries. It will be up to OSHA to decide if the men were strapped to the bucket correctly.
Okay, and this was at what kind of...
It was at one of those traveling carnival things.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure. It wasn't like the stationary kind. It wasn't the sort of... Because that's never the deal, right? It's always just some guys who have to, like, get it torn down and get it to Akron and get it put up again by 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Has anybody ever done any sort of, like, a... This seems like one of those... This seems like one of those articles that, you know, like, it, like you're sort of... that you're... One of your Chuck Klosterman types might write, or the Infinite Jest. Help me out, David Foster Wallace.
Yeah.
David Foster Wallace. That he Well, if only that were possible, that he would write. But, you know, but one of those guys who does the investigating those things that are constantly referred to or, you know, or discussed in popular culture and trying to figure out exactly what the reality is, like what are the actual – the underpinnings of it. Because carnies are a thing that get referenced so frequently. You know, it's like one of the great joys of my life is when my wife told me that her dad, my father-in-law, actually was a carny when he was a younger man, which was like – and I just – man, I beeline. To his room in the house, and it was just peppering him with questions like left and right. And apparently I don't think it's a Skillo wheel. I think that's a thing from Price is Right. But it was like, he and his dad were totally carnies. And so it's like they spent for a year and a half. They just traveled. I think it was down in the South, and they would just travel from town to town, like tearing down, setting up, and then he ran some sort of like a skilled tent where like rubes would come in and be hustled, which is awesome. And you know that is a thing that you know it's like always hearing like the you know the bearded lady and the you know the lobster boy and the clam guy and you know whoever it is that's you know that's like in the freak tent. There was actually that documentary that came out several years ago about that town in Florida where a lot of the circus freaks retire to. I want to know the whole thing with carnies. I mean, even if the truth is just exactly what I imagine it to be, I would really like someone to embed themselves with carnies for like 3 weeks, you know, or like three setup and teardowns, you know, from state
Ryan
to
White?
State to state. I'm
Done.
Telling you, that's a thing people would read, and that's a thing people would find interesting.
A couple of weeks ago, I was at George's Sports Bar on Interstate. Largely, we chose to go there because me and my buddy, who were trying to figure out where we wanted to go to watch a game, we'd driven by there hundreds of times and had never gone inside, and we wanted to see what it was like. And so I'm getting up to go to the bathroom at one point, and there's a woman sitting at one of the bar trivia machines talking to this dude who was in his jazzy at the other bar trivia machine, and as I come around the corner, all I hear say is, and of course he'd been a carny for years. And I went, oh, this is exactly what I wanted.
By the way, our friend Seamus weighs in, says, I was a carny for a stint when I was 14. All the stories are true. It's like an above-ground sewer of humanity. I ran the ring toss, the skee ball, the hoop shoot, and the milk jug toss, he says. So that is a job. I sort of am this kind of low-grade, like really uninteresting Studs Terkel in that I find other people's jobs really interesting, even if they themselves – like I was just – when Ryan was talking about like having to get the A&E section ready for the Oregonian, I was like, Uncle Ryan, tell me how the newspaper runs, because I just have no idea. And so I'm always interested in that stuff. And so it is with
if you would like to job shadow someday.
Well, maybe if Don will sign my permission slip. By the way, I'm assuming that this is a thing that I can say out loud, and if not,
too late.
It should have been marked as such. It's Seamus, says, well, he just says I just hit rock bottom on the shame meter. I had no groceries and no food in the house, so I ordered a large pizza for delivery. And when the girl got here, I pretended I was talking to someone else in the house so she wouldn't think it was only for me. Said, I might as well turn on the Rick Emerson Show and listen live now so I can complete my circle of shame listening to you guys talk about boobs and television.
Okay.
All right, so there you go. Well, I'm glad we could help. Glad we could be the final item on that checklist.
Is that really what we provide people? Shame?
Yes. Well, additional shame, it sounds like.
Comfort.
Yes, that's there.
With
you
the
go.
Shame.
Because that's the thing. You don't call it shame food, it's comfort food. There you go. We're comfort programming.
All right.
I have totally done that, by the way, though, of the pretending that there is, you know, pretending like if I've gone to a restaurant, you know, at times in the past when I know that I'm feeling, you know, I'm rather peckish, and I'll order a great deal of food, and I will sometimes just say, well, I'm going to be joined by somebody later on. And of course, when they bring the food, I will position it as though part of it's going to be for the other guy. And then I would just finish mine, and then I would just swap plates, and I would put the empty plate on the other side of the table, and I would bring their portion over, and the waiter would be like, you know, where'd he go? I mean, you just missed him. He was just here. So don't feel ashamed, sir.
I don't usually care about things like that, but I have to admit, a couple of months ago, I was at a Plaid Pantry, and I had this craving for some kind of like Reese's peanut butter cup kind of a thing. And so we had been talking about like the fast break bars and things like that. So I was looking for something like that. So I picked something up, and I went to the Plaid Pantry thing, and the guy goes, well, you know, you can buy like the super giant extreme jumbo size for like half the price of that because it's on sale right now. They're right over there by the door. And I think the fact that I had to walk over and get it and then bring it back made me like just go, well, okay, sure, were they? It's not for me anyway, so what the hell? Why do I care what the plaid pantry guy thinks?
You shouldn't, but I do too. Because somebody just typed something that I do this. I have totally done that. I have, because I, you know, as I said, I'm not, you know, I don't eat a lot all the time, but I will have these sort of weird binges where I'll just, you know, especially if I forget to eat, because I'll just forget to eat for days on end, and then I will have to remind myself, like, you know, must eat now. But of course, when you do that, you're never eating. That's never like you then go right to the store and get something balanced and healthy. That's when I go and I just get like the huge tube of spray cheese and like a huge thing of chicken fingers and then like those Triscuits that are drenched in olive oil. And then that becomes like, those are my sandwich fixings for the
night. And
then
you buy some little kids' party plates so it looks like you're having a party.
I'm having some people over tonight is what I will say for that. Yes, no. We're going to be watching the big game and playing some cards and other manly activities. That's why I need all of these Triscuits, sir. I have absolutely done that.
I was at Fred Meyer a couple of weeks ago. The day I got back from Coachella, and my wife and daughter were still back east, and I just went straight to Fred Meyer and I got a 12 pack of beer and some frozen pizzas, and the woman looks at me and she goes, "Wife's out of town, eh?"
Well, there must be, like, if you work at, if you're a checkout person, you must see enough combinations of things that after a while it's like reading poker hands. You can just look and you can immediately go, "I see. Okay, here's the situation at this guy's house right now." I have actually
He just got divorced.
There's that, or the I forget why it was like something like a year and a half, 2 years ago. Something like I'd gotten sunburned or something. I had to buy. I forget why now, but there was some reason that I had to buy like a thing of like the regular like the Johnson and Johnson, like the baby oil, mm-hmm. And it was like that's a thing where I'm just standing in line. I think it was like with just that. Or it may have been like baby oil and like, oh, I'll get Triscuits while I'm here. But then it's like I immediately – but then I actually found myself pretending, like talking about a baby that I don't have and that doesn't exist. Well, you know, the diaper rash. You know, it's like there's no – I don't even know if that's what baby oil is for. I don't even – I just assume it's for humping. I mean, you know?
I was the day we came home from the hospital with the baby, and I had a couple of runs to make, and one of them was to the Fred Meyer again down the street. And there's, without getting graphic, there's a bunch of little things that you need to buy for your wife in that situation as things begin to heal and need assistance and stuff like that. And I'm looking in the basket at this collection of things that I had purchased. And then I was just like, oh, F it. And I went over to the vegetable thing and threw a cucumber in there, too. And I was just like,
we got a promotion. We're celebrating.
But you've had those moments, though. I mean, everyone has. You're at the grocery store and you see the person in line near you, and it's like this woman, and it's like 9 o'clock at night, and she's buying nothing but a stack of like frozen dinners, and then she has those individual cans of Fancy Feast cat food, and you just think, I'm so sad for you.
When I worked at 7-Eleven, that was like the worst because you would see these. First of all, like you'd see like guys come in, and sometimes it was a guy, sometimes it was a guy, and a girl or whoever, and they would come in, and it's like they would immediately be like, "Do you got rubbers?" And they'd be like, "Yes, I do." They're right. You know where they are. Just go get. And then he would ask me. There was this one guy who came in, and he was like, "Where are your condoms?" And I said, "Well, they're back between the Duraflame and the thing." And he went and he got them, and he brought up like three different boxes, and he said, "So which of these is the best?" And it's like, how am I even supposed to answer that question without asking him all sorts of like clarifying questions? But like, well, what is it you have planned, sir? Is it around the world, or is it just the regular? I mean, here's the other thing, this is a thing I don't know anything about. Let me ask you a question, Don. Don, you have a vagina. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this question: the thing that they sell. By the way, I'd like to welcome new listener and subscriber Roger, who is joining us today for the first time. Also, Barb, also Melody's mom, who is listening as of, I think, this week. So, hello and welcome. But you know, they sell those rubbers that are like the ribbed for her. They're ribbed for.
Are
they
for
ribbed
no
for anyone's pleasure?
No.
Is that a thing?
There is. See, the thing is, there are no nerve endings on the inside of the vaginal canal. You can feel pressure, so like width and vibration and stuff like that, you can feel movement, but you can't,
those don't provide either of those.
You feel nothing from anything that is ridged or textured, nothing at all.
And I think, I'd say from like from the male perspective, I don't think there's ever like any demonstrable difference. I don't think there's any.
No, it's just to fool the guy into thinking he's doing something extra.
Well, but if it's the guy who was just like, if he is somehow he's feeling anxious, or he feels uncertain of his sexual prowess, he thinks this will basically do the work.
I think they're the ones that are like pink or glow in the dark or something. It's just like an extra unnecessary gimmick.
Well, it's like, here's the reason I ask. And I have no idea really what these are, but the guy would bring these up to the counter and he would say, this is the guy, and I guess it was just the one time, but he brought these up and he goes, so, you know, tell me about, and it was like the regular kind and then the color kind and then the ribbed. But then there was one of these, they were studded. And that just sounds unpleasant.
Yeah.
I mean, that just sounds like.
For winter storms.
It'd be a lot of Eskimo sex.
It's a little frosty down there.
It's easier than chaining.
Awesome. I'm not even going to try to follow that.
The convenience store thing, I was going out with a guy once and we were on our way back to his home, and he mentioned that he did not have any protection. And then he said, and I don't even want to know why he knew that. He's like, they sell them at the convenience store here, which I guess you would know that.
Well, because
they do have them right there up behind the cigarettes.
He's responsible.
And so I said, yeah, okay. And so I was just, I said, he's like, you want to come in? I was like, no, I really would rather not go in with you to buy the small, the 3-pack of, you go take care of this and I'll just wait here. So he went in, got him, came out the door of the store and then yelled at the car, I got the condoms, and
awesome.
Held them up in his hand and waved them over his head.
We have this. When I was 17, message says, when I was 17, a girlfriend and I got the largest bulk pack of condoms we could find and the two largest bottles of Gatorade we could at Rite Aid. The clerk wouldn't even look at us on the way out. That's just, but I have sold to those people as well, where it's like they come in and it's like the guy goes to get the condoms, and like the girl's going to get like a huge bottle of Zima or something. And then they're just buying something really, really random. Like they are buying a thing of like Velveeta or something. And you're like, I don't even, just leave.
Well, my friends and I, when we worked Renaissance Fair, we would often make this early morning, Saturday morning run at the grocery store or the, they sell liquor at your drug stores down in California. And so we would make one of these runs to the store, and we're standing there at 8 o'clock in the morning wearing Renaissance Fair costumes, and we're loading up the belt with a gallon bottle of vodka, sunscreen, a thing of Entenmann's, condoms. And they're going down, and it was that's when your life is just kind of spiraling into an odd direction.
You mentioned the woman who comes up and she buys the TV dinner and then all the single serving cat feast. There was this woman who actually used to come into the 7-Eleven. She was I think she was probably a crazy cat lady. She's a woman of larger carriage and obviously was not did not seem to be. It didn't really look like she was keeping herself pretty for anybody at home. It wasn't she was one step away from coming in cold cream and and carrying a rolling pin. But her whole thing is she would just, and I always wanted to ask, it's one of the things where you just at a certain point you feel have you maybe thought of talking to somebody or just try, there's a you could call your J-date, your OK Cupid, your whatever, just there's got to be a special someone out there for you somewhere. Because she would come in on Friday and she would sometimes do this, but she would buy a bottle of really cheap it wasn't Boone's Farm, but it was Arbor Mist or something, which is one of those wines they sell at 7-Eleven, but it would be that, and it would be a huge tube of cookie dough. Here's the thing. I like cookies. Everybody likes cookies. Here's what I don't do, though. I don't buy a big bottle of Arbor Mist wine at 7-Eleven and the tube of cookie dough and then open the tube of cookie dough while I'm still in the parking lot and then using it like some sort of a room temperature Otter Pop. I mean, it was just,
Oh, God.
It was just, it was so terrible. And that was the thing where I looked at it and went, look away, and just tried to flush it out of my head immediately.
I was just thinking about how much it depresses me whenever I see that sign that says Hot Pockets, 99 cents at Plaid Pantry. And I think, who's buying Hot Pockets at Plaid Pantry? That your life is just sad when that's how you're feeding yourself. But the cookie dough thing is infinitely more
depressing. Yeah, no, it was like seeing her in the, it was like the guy who can't wait to get, he's lighting the smoke as he's walking out the door or scratching the ticket still, before he even starts the car. By the way, here's another type you always see at the 7-Eleven or the convenience store as opposed to a grocery store. So I was at the Plaid Pantry last night, and there's a couple in front of me and they're buying the scratchers, and then they say the thing of all right, we may see you again in a few moments to buy more, you never know, and then they walked out, and it's like that, it's there but for the grace of just a second grade education. Go all of us.
For some reason, this I just remember we hadn't mentioned this earlier. We were talking about Wonder Northwest. It was a Rick discovered this weekend that in addition to clowns, I'm also freaked out by people in animal costumes because you got to see me lose it when there was a guy in a cow suit holding a giant bloody axe. Because clowns terrify me, and then only just one step below that are people in like animal suits, and I was like la 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 doing my thing, hey pirates, hey anime chicks, hey something, and I turned around, oh god, a cow, it was like a giant cow,
huge cow, tall, walking upright on two legs, holding a bloody axe, and it was just the weirdest thing,
and I just ran away basically, I just was kind of like I have to go now,
I can't
and I
be
just
here
took
now.
Off.
Somebody.
Well, I was at the St. John's Bazaar and parade on Saturday up in St. John's. Missed the parade. Went up to the bazaar, and there's somebody walking around like an eco group, and they were kind of walking around their mascot in a giant tree suit. And I was sitting there watching it as the guy in the tree suit got snagged on an actual tree.
That's awesome.
And it was my favorite thing. Like, it took three of them to untangle him from the real tree.
Let's see. Final two messages on this one. Oh my God, I knew a guy who had a couple hundred metal studs surgically implanted under the skin of his member to enhance the ladies' experience. He said, even grosser, I knew a girl I knew was seriously into that type of body mod, hooked up with him. It's the most hideous thing ever. It's like he had robo warts or something on his junk.
Well, you know, at least he found someone who actually found that appealing.
And Inri Cookie Dough Lady said, that's the point where you know she's thinking about driving into oncoming traffic on the way home. Go out eating. All right. Jesus. I don't even know what we're doing at this point.
We do have a taser watch. We should probably do
that. All right.
That.
Well, and we're heading into like 3:10, 3:15, so we'll just plow through. We'll get all the way to the end. Ryan will be mercifully released from our horrid embrace. Sarah and Greg will be in here for funemploymentradio.com in just a skosh. So we got a taser watch right now, as a matter of fact. Don Taylor with your taser watch.
Okay. A Monroe, Mississippi man accused of being extremely intoxicated. And my phone is refreshing there. Oh, yeah, hold on.
Are you reading this story directly from the internet via your phone?
From my phone.
Okay.
And I pushed the wrong button and it went away.
I'll just give it a...
Okay.
You ready?
Yes, I am. Thank you. A Mississippi man accused of being extremely intoxicated was arrested after Ouachita Parish Sheriff's deputies responded to calls of a large fight. Deputies arrested Terry Alexander, 43, on Sunday night on charges of disturbing the peace and resisting an officer. According to arrest reports, the sheriff's office received four 911 calls reporting a fight on Cedar Crest Street in Monroe. While deputies were talking to witnesses, several people reported that Alexander was one of the main suspects in the fight. Deputies attempted to question Alexander, but he refused to remove his left hand from the inside of his waistband. Alexander refused deputies' commands to remove his hand from his pants and eventually was tased and taken into custody. Deputies reported Alexander was extremely intoxicated, and Alexander told deputies that he drank several beers. He was not holding a weapon, by the way. He just wouldn't take his hand out of his pants.
He just wouldn't take his hand out of his pants. Just another guy who just felt like, well, I'll be belligerent. What's the worst that could possibly happen?
He was taken to the correctional center and bond was set at $700 after, you know, he was tased.
You were not here last week when we were talking about a brand new kind of taser. It's being it's a shotgun that shoots tasers.
Ooh.
So it actually, that's what I'm saying. So it actually contains shells that inside them contain the taserous barbs.
I can't wait for the first journalist that steps in front of that one for that tired story.
That's the guy described it as being, I think he described it as being like the most painful thing. Painful thing that you could possibly
The most excruciatingly painful thing you could experience.
Yeah, that there was, in fact, there was no comparison to it. So,
and you can shoot it from up to 100 feet away.
It's too bad Rick Sanchez lost his job.
Yeah, that is a thing. That's a thing where you really are, you know the science is working for us. All right, there you go. That is your taser watch for Monday, right here on this, the Rick Emerson Radio, wait, program. You got me running, going out of my mind. I can't do it, bro. You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time. Don't chase me, bro. I tell you once more before I get. awesome. Fantastic. All right then. Well, let's plow through, get a few more done. We will wrap this up here in just a skosh and so forth. Don Taylor.
Yeah. A new bar game in Albuquerque involving goldfish and spray bottles is attracting new customers and criticism. Coach's Bar and Grill owners say they started hosting goldfish racing last year. Frank Turk says it's been such a success that they host tournaments with grand prizes at stake. Turk said the popularity of the game brings in between 20 to 30 people on race nights just to participate. Like old folks and young folks are racing against each other, Turk said, joking with each other. The setup doesn't cost much. All that's needed is a couple of gutters filled with water and several goldfish. There's a little skill involved. The rules are easy. You dump a fish into the water-filled gutter, squirt water at your fish, and watch it swim down to the finish line. And then he says, when I blow the whistle, you both dump your fish in there, and the only thing you can use is your squirt bottle. They've given away prizes as big as new bicycles and flat-screen televisions. PETA spokesperson Gemma Vaughn said, since the fish are so small, squirting water from a spray bottle could probably feel more like blasting water at the fish. She said it could be hurting them. Most people don't know that fish are very sensitive animals and that they do have complex nervous systems, she said. Fish might not be cute and cuddly like dogs and cats, but these fish do feel pain just the same. PETA's also concerned after hearing drunken patrons are swallowing the live fish for added entertainment.
That's what I was waiting for, because you know that if you put a drunk guy and a goldfish in the same room, like, it's just a matter of time until one of them ingests the other. That is just one of nature's laws.
Yeah. Turk said, you know, in some 30-odd weeks we've done this, we've only had one person drink the fish. It's their own prerogative if they want to drink the fish. I'm not going to say no, but it would be funny if they did.
Let me ask you this. is the thing of the goldfish swallowing competition or whatever, is that just, I don't say an urban legend, but just like crap that we reference as a way to talk about goofy 50s college stunts that didn't actually happen? Or were there people who were actually competing to swallow goldfish?
I think they probably did, yeah, like cramming into phone booths and flagpole sitting.
I see, but is the flagpole sitting, is that a thing, except for like the one guy that's like in the Guinness Book, is that a thing that people actually did? Like, was there an epidemic of, was there a rash of flagpole sitters?
Yeah, that was a thing in like the 20s.
How do you sit on top of a flagpole?
Carefully.
You
but I mean, there's just like, it's, but it doesn't even seem like the physics of it would even work.
They would bring chairs up with them.
Oh, I see.
You basically get up top and you have a chair, and then you're basically balancing, sitting on a chair, balancing on top of the flagpole.
So it's not affixed to the flagpole.
No.
It's just you were hoping against gravity and wind and so forth.
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Hey, by the way, speaking of gravity and wind, this is apropos of absolutely nothing except to say that I finally finished watching that Man on Wire film. Jesus. You know, it's a movie that gave me vertigo just watching it. I mean, it's like, I don't know why it took me so long. I think it was right as Laura and I got ready to we were transitioning from watching DVDs to watching streaming things on Netflix. And I think it was one of the actual last DVDs that we'd had sent to us. And it was that probably everybody says this, but it was like, I always seem to get the cracked or damaged discs from Netflix constantly. Or maybe it was just that they didn't cooperate very well with my Xbox. So I think we got like halfway through it and it was screwing up and we didn't get to finish watching it. So I finished watching it via the streaming Netflix stuff just last week. Really, that is, I mean, if anybody has not seen that, that is a movie that I felt nearly ill at certain points just watching him. I mean, even just thinking about him doing that. So that's when I hear about stuff like flagpole sitting. It just, you know, it unnerves me just in the deepest way, because it does not seem possible.
No, and it's just intensely stupid.
Yeah, well, but,
you know, that's the human way, isn't it?
Well, it really is. All right. I know that we asked you this when you first came in today, but is there anything coming up of note in the Oregonian?
The Hayes Carl story last Friday. I think we haven't set a run date on it yet, but next Monday the new Sally Ford, the full length debut from Sally Ford and the Sound Outside, really really good local band, comes out. So we'll have a feature on that. I just saw before I came over here. That August 11th, the Motley Crue Poison New York Dolls tour will be at the Sleep Country Amphitheater. So there will be a blog post on that coming tomorrow.
The New York Dolls?
Yes.
Is that even possible at this point? Isn't there?
Yes.
Why not? David Johansen's still hauling
his name?
Butt out.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess that's just a who owns the name sort of a question at this point. So,
so we'll get back to probably having music notes up there tomorrow. Bunch of stuff on the blog.
All right.
As always.
Ryan White can be read online at OregonLive.com/music and in print at in the Oregonian. And this is all true. Let's see. We want to thank, by the way, again, everybody who came out to Wonder Northwest this weekend, don't we, Dawn? Sean.
Yes.
What?
I'm just wondering, I just keep thinking, do the people who want to go see Poison and...
want to see the New York Dolls?
And Motley Crue want to see the New York Dolls?
No, no, the answer to that is
no. Yeah,
no.
Nikki Sixx is very excited about it.
But that's why. I was going to say, that's the answer to that, is that it's A, that it gives them cool points. B, I mean, here's the thing about Nikki Sixx, I was actually going to save some observations for this for tomorrow. I was not going to use that as the inspiration for a top five, but I'll get to it at some point. But I will say this about Nikki Sixx. Whatever anybody thinks about him or Motley Crue, that guy is nobody's fool. He is a shrewd marketer, and he is definitely the Gene Simmons of the band, and always has been. Because by all rights, Motley Crue shouldn't even really be able to tour at this point. I mean, because
they're... No, they should have officially died when Vince Neil started figure skating on ABC.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you think about it, that band survived, and I don't mean just, like, physically survived, but I mean, they survived, like, the incarceration of their singer, and of course, you know, and they survived firing their singer, replacing him with some other guy, bringing him back. They
grunge.
Grunge, which that should have been the thing that, you know, that hobbled them forevermore. But not only, did it not kill him, I mean, they came a couple years ago for the, you know, they were doing that thing of playing Dr. Feelgood all the way through. Yeah. I mean, at Clark County, which was, I mean, and the place was packed. I mean, it was just absolutely packed. So I think they, like Guns N' Roses, were able to, they were just close enough to the line of being actual metal that they, you know what they were? They were like, they didn't get hit by the vehicle of grunge as it drove by. They were just close enough that they got splashed really badly, you know? So yeah. It's like they were waiting at the bus stop and, you know, Nirvana drove by and just sort of drenched them, but they didn't really get, you know, they weren't actually injured. But Nikki Sixx knows, first of all, A, he's a huge fan of the New York Dolls. B, that is the thing that gets them extra, you know, extra hip points, and, you know, and that, you know, that will get them, you know, it will up the cool factor of the whole tour. And also, he's already got the money of people who would pay to see Poison. You know, if you're going to pay to see Motley Crue, you're going to pay to see Poison, you'd probably pay to see the other. Somebody who pays to see the New York Dolls is not going to pay to see Motley Crue or Poison and vice versa. But this way, he can get all the money from people who say, well, I'm really going for the Dolls. Whether or not they stay for Motley Crue, he didn't care. He's already got your money. So once you buy a ticket to see the New York Dolls, you know, when some guy in pegged pants decides that that's a thing he has to pay for, Nikki Sixx is happy because that's all he needs, you know? A stop by the merch table only helps the New York Dolls at that point. He didn't even care. He probably didn't even care if you really come to the show. That's a thing he puts on the bill because it's going to suck up a few extra dollars for him. So, you know, I got to here's my one great Nikki Sixx story is that when they came for that show to play Dr. Feelgood all the way through, we actually, at the last one, I have to thank Susan Reynolds for this, we actually wrangled a last moment interview with him backstage in his dressing room. And I remember almost nothing about it because I wasn't starstruck in the traditional sense of becoming, you know, sort of tongue-tied or not knowing what to say or just, you know, being, you know, like I didn't turn into like, you know, I never really do like the fawning fanboy thing or whatever. Anytime I've interviewed anybody, where I am legitimately sort of, you know, kind of in awe of the fact that it's happening, it just manifests itself in this almost total inability to remember the interview at all.
It just all moves fast.
That's the thing. It's almost like I wasn't even walking. It was like I was in a Spike Lee film, and I was in that one shot he does where I'm just being rolled around on the front of the camera, like I'm just being propelled on wheels down the hallway. But it's in like the middle of the Clark County, like the backstage management, you know, and like the logistics office, which just looks like you're at a 24-hour like medical clinic somewhere, like one of those places you go when you got like a minor burn or scrape or something. It's just a bunch of brightly lit cubicle like boxy rooms, and so they're just taking you through this maze of rooms, and then we get to like some nondescript door that just has nothing on it, and they knock, and he opens it, and there's like none of his people inside, no handlers, no entrees, no whatever. It's just Nikki Sixx, but clearly it is in somebody's rider that his room has to be laid out in, you know, in the proper spooky and mysterious fashion so that you can think he's deep. Because the place is just festooned with these like weird Stevie Nixian tapestries. It's all like these dark purple, you know, sort of sashes that are hung everywhere. There were candles burning, and it was only later that I realized that they were those weird like touch candles where it's like I think they're actual like a real wax base. But then they're like electronic wicks or something inside. There's no actual flame or whatever. So we had those, and then Greg was the one who pointed this out because it was Sarah and Greg and I, and Sarah was just, you know, sort of there kind of taking some pictures, and Greg was actually, I put Greg in charge of holding the tape recorder because I was so desperately afraid that I would somehow press the wrong button and not record it, and then I would have to take my own life. And so I was like, "You have to be the one who makes sure that this is recording." And then I sat and I sat on this sofa, which was in itself weird because I'm sitting like 6 inches away. I mean, it was kind of this small backstage sofa, so I'm sitting like on the sofa with Nikki Sixx, and it was all very bizarre. But Greg pointed out later that he had carefully opened on the coffee table. There was nothing but candles and then the Tibetan Book of the Dead opened to like halfway through with a bookmark carefully placed like rakishly across the page as though we'd interrupted him in the middle of an important passage. Like he was caught up in a lengthy footnote on page 75 about the transitional periods of the soul when we interrupted him. And, you know, and that is really the only thing that I remember from that entire interview. But he is a guy who has maintained careful control of his image and of Motley Crue's image forever, and I think has probably been the one to monitor their books, which is why he is smart enough to do something like touring with the New York Dolls. So, because I would never, you couldn't pay me enough to go see the New York Dolls. But again, you put Bret Michaels there, Rick Emerson is in attendance. So, all right. As we wrap this up, I should take a moment to say that today's Rick Emerson Radio program, of course, brought to you by Squires Electric. Where can they be found online, Don?
At SquiresElectric.com.
Where else?
On Facebook.
Facebook.com.
Squires Electric.
/ Squires Electric. Indeed. You go there, and somebody asked if I was making this up. I'm not. You go there, and you can actually see it still up. The photo of the snake that they found when they were going to look at some guy's sort of electrical, like that sort of box that's outside your house where it's the big square box and then the two metal sheathed big sort of wiring,
at your house, like, it's where all the spiders live.
It's exactly where the spiders live, but at somebody else's house, there was a large and fearsome-looking reptile. So if you got the... I mean, if the joint is really full of snakes, you probably should call somebody else, frankly. I don't really know that's... They don't want to become... I don't think they want that to become their bailiwick. But they will handle, I would say some minor extermination duties while they're there. Squires Electric can be found online at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They are Squires Electric, and they help to make possible this very fine radio programming. So your home or your business, if it has to do with wires or wiring, it's your business or your house, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. The news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology, magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. And we want to thank our guests today, including Mr. Aaron Durand, who can be found at geekinthecity.com, and Ryan White, who can be read online at oregonlive.com/music, and in the newspaper at Oregon, the Oregonian, which is found at the finer newsstands and probably on your porch, whether you ask for it to be placed there or not. So, as always, we thank you for listening. It is Monday, May 16th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.